Hey, listeners, once again, you have clicked play, and I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us for another episode. As always, we're here to talk about industrial automation, all the parts that make it happen, and anything else that might come up along the way. This episode's a little different and unique, but continues the mini-series we've been doing on digital transformation. So why is this one different? Because we got a chance to record it live and in person in Anaheim, California at Rockwell Automation's annual Automation Fair. Tom and I got the opportunity to speak with our friend Nick Putman, manager of business development at Rockwell Automation. Nick had been on the plant before, but it's been a while, and he always brings knowledge and clarity to the show and conversation. So enjoy this episode and email us any questions you have at podcast@thinmanager.com. Don't forget to subscribe. Enjoy the show. All right. So honestly, it feels like it's been a while since we've done one of these. Tom, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Brian. How are you?
Man, I'm doing pretty good. I think I'm still a little bit full from Thanksgiving.
Yes. Yeah. Big Thanksgiving this year. We had a big turkey come out of our oven.
Good. Good. Well, always great to be back on here. This episode's a pretty cool one. I'm sure I don't need to tell you, but for our listeners, the week before Thanksgiving, we had Automation Fair. This year in California, in Anaheim, California. And so while we were there, in an effort to continue our mini series here on digital transformation, we got a chance to sit down with Nick Putman and talk a little bit about data in the world of digital transformation, and specifically data mosaics, the Factory Talk data mosaics from Rockwell Automation.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. It was a great conversation, and I've had some inkling of what data mosaics did. But, you know, after having that conversation, I realized that it's really a very fancy report card. I don't know if you remember, you know, back in the days when you're in school, your teachers put your grades in there, and you get this cumulative report. I'm doing this well in math, or this well in reading, and maybe this well or not so well in science. And but anyway, it tells you, you know, where you're doing well. But it also allows you to see where you need to improve. And I think that's kind of, if you want to look at an easy way to tell the story, data mosaics allows you to create report cards, and people can take action on that data and do something with it.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great way to look at it. And I think one of the things that was interesting when we were talking to Nick that I hadn't thought about, because, you know, you think about some of the predictive analytical tools that tell you what to do. But what was interesting when talking to him is some of the things that you should stop doing.
Yes.
And that's just really something I hadn't, it makes perfect sense, obviously, but I hadn't really thought about. You run these reports and you're like, oh, we should stop doing this. That's a good idea.
Yes. My report cards used to say, stop being tardy.
Don't talk so much. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, for the listeners, this is a fun interview. We got to do it live and in person, which we don't get to do quite as often, to actually look at each other and do these shows. So it was a lot of fun. Always good to talk with Nick. So let's cue it up, and we can talk about it afterwards.
Let's do it.
All right. To get started, Nick, thanks so much for joining us. I know I told you before we started, but we've been talking digital transformation. We've talked about what digital transformation is, as well as a little bit about digital design and emulation and simulation with Emulate 3D. And we wanted to have you on here because I want to talk about data. And I think when we get started here, or to get started here, I guess tell us a little bit about you, kind of how you got to where you are and what you do, and we'll go from there.
You go from there.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks, Brian. Thanks, Tom. It's a pleasure to be back on the podcast. It's been a few years, and really thrilled to be here, have the opportunity to talk, like you said, about data today. My background started in the process space before I worked my way into a familiar thin client delivery platform, Thin Manager, which I still very fond of and have the pleasure to continue to support day to day. But you know, really, my focus over the past few years has been working with our partner ecosystem and really helping them identify opportunities to adopt and to deliver new technologies from Rockwell. So while we put a large focus on the new technologies that meet our customers' needs, my focus has really been in helping our partner ecosystem understand the benefits that it brings them and their end user customers.
So, Nick, is that existing customers usually, or is it new customers, or both?
Well, Tom, that's a really great question. I would say historically, we've worked through our existing ecosystem to deliver what I would consider our core automation technologies. But as we have this shift into a data-driven world, we're seeing a lot of new partners that we've not typically worked with come into the space, and they're bringing a lot of unique skill sets, you know, especially those in the IT, the scripting, the information software space. So yeah, we are seeing a kind of an uptick in new partners across the Rockwell ecosystem to really help with the topic of data. So it's a really relevant topic for today, I think, yeah.
Indeed. Also shows it's everyone's problem right now, too.
It is absolutely everybody's problem.
Well, and I think that's what makes it so intriguing is that it is a problem, you know, and I guess as we talk about digital transformation and stepping into the digital age and taking older companies and making them new again, if you will, you know, what do people do with all the data, all the tags, all the analytics, all the information that's coming in from all the smart devices and all the controllers and all that kind of stuff? I think that's what makes it so intriguing.
Yeah, I think maybe we start with some of the typical customer problems there, Brian. And, you know, we talked a little bit about this offline, but right, it's we've seen that for years people have been collecting data and they've been putting it into to data lakes, or sometimes we hear the term even data ocean, right? Because there's just too much without context. So when we have data in different data silos, when we have a lack of context to that data in the manufacturing process, when we have a lack of data governance, or we're always trying to create point solutions to visualize that for one, you know, one-off type use cases, that's really where this problem starts to arise. I think especially in manufacturing, you know, there's a lot of different types of data that we'll see. You know, you could take you know, time series data, right? So you may have a temperature or a pressure that we're monitoring over time. But if we don't have any context of what the product is that we were making or what was happening in the plant at that time or what was the temperature that day, did we have a unique weather event ongoing in the area, right? There's a lot of things that we could start to consider. So I think the problems start with not having data contextualized and talking all of the same language. And so what we're starting to see with customers is they're really looking for kind of this, you know, we talk a lot now about data ops, right? They're looking for a data ops platform where they can start to kind of aggregate all of that data into one place so that they can make that data useful and ultimately do something with it, right? I mean, the power in data is being able to take action on it, not just in having it in front of us, right? So
whose job is that? So between IT and OT, or is it someone else?
Great question. I think it's a bit of everybody. So it starts with making data available, and that oftentimes is still going to reside with our, we'll call it our OT audience, right? It's putting data in a place that's making it accessible to those in, you know, in IT field so that they can aggregate data across multiple lines, multiple facilities, multiple regions, you know, even multiple countries across the world. So it starts with making all that data available, and that happens at the OT layer. From there, I think it's all about then selecting a tool that everybody's comfortable with, right? We have to have that, you know, IT-OT convergence, as we always talk about, right?
Yes.
And having confidence in a platform that allows OT to still, you know, focus on what their priorities are, right? Throughput and optimizing their production and meeting a production schedule, while allowing that data to become consumable by somebody in an IT realm in a way that they are typically comfortable consuming that data, and then allowing that to almost stay isolated, if you will, from the process ownership, I think is really important. So having and selecting a platform for your data ops portfolio that allows everybody to kind of work where they are and almost meet people where they are, right? I think that's a really powerful piece.
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, let's get into the underlying question there. Like, let's talk about a platform.
Sure.
So I guess the right platform brings all the different things. Like, I guess Is there that platform?
So that platform for Rockwell Automation is FactoryTalk Data Mosaics, right? We always talk about Data Mosaics being the platform that allows us to make data available, make data meaningful, make it useful, and then make it valuable, right? Those are kind of the four pillars or the ways that we look at data mosaics. And if you peel back even the name, Brian, right, a mosaic, right? What is a mosaic? It's typically a bunch of disparate pieces of tile or ceramic that on their own don't mean a whole lot. But when the artist brings those all together and puts them into a meaningful pattern, all of a sudden we, you know, as the consumer of the art in that case, can see the vision or the picture that that artist had. And that's really what we're trying to do here, is we're trying to provide the platform for the artist, or, you know, in this case, it's the data scientist, it's the process control engineer, it's whoever needs to rationalize that information. We're giving them the tools so that they can bring all of these different pieces into a single platform and start to be able to realize some benefit from that. So Data Mosaics is that platform for Rockwell, and it does an excellent job of being able to, you know, align different types of data, make sure that we're talking in a common time series, that we're able to bring in, you know, production data, schedule data, shift data, and visualize that all together at once. And then the underlying intelligence that that platform has also helps us, you know, alleviate some of the need of a data science engineer, not to replace the need for those individuals by any means, but to try to help identify common trends and call attention to areas that might need a deeper look, right? So it's not going to solve all of the world's problems, but it's absolutely going to bring some focus points to the right people so that they can be more effective in their jobs.
And what does that output look like? Does someone get a spreadsheet after they put in all the data?
Well, here's your ticket. Here's your answer.
Yeah, it's a great question, Tom. So Data Mosaics is a platform that does allow some ad hoc trending and some visualization of the data. So you could absolutely, in a more typical data science approach, leverage all of the information and start to extract what you believe are the problematic or data points that you need to take action on. But more common, what we see is that our partner ecosystem is developing applications on top of that platform, right? They are the experts in their own end users' fields. They are the experts in process or in batch or in producing tire and rubber or whatever it may be. And so they will build and develop custom applications that consume the data that's brought into these platforms so that it's more easily reusable across their customer segments or across their the space that they serve. And I think the real power of that is that instead of having somebody develop an ad hoc tool or just trying to trend on what we think is important today, we have other individuals and other groups putting time into focus areas so that we can really dive into, say, how do we process or how do we optimize the performance of our batch, say in a life cycle sciences industry, mm-hmm. or how do we optimize a mining application so that we're utilizing our assets the most appropriately. And when you have somebody that's taking kind of the product lifecycle ownership of that application that sits on top of the data platform, now all of a sudden, you know, you can start to decouple yourself as the end user with having to always worry about maintaining this application, if you will, which was one of the challenges that I think we've seen before. And now you can start to leverage this ecosystem of applications, right? If we look across, you know, the Googles and the Microsofts, right, the sum of their partners are delivering a lot more value than they are individually on their own. Right, you don't go out to Google on your phone or Apple on your phone. It'd be a pretty boring piece of hardware here in my right hand if I didn't have any apps on it, right?
Right.
And while the developer or the owner of the platform, Apple in this case, they provided me with some core functionality like the ad hoc trending and data mosaics, or like the calling and the messaging features on the phone, they haven't provided me with the applications that I use most, whether that be to check a sports call, score, check in with family, or share what I'm doing, you know, on a day-to-day basis with friends and family around the world. So that's really, I think, the one of the big powers of the platform is allowing the ecosystem to develop the applications on top of it and providing a common way to structure and talk about data. And that structure is really important so that we can be repeatable and in our consumption of that data and, again, ultimately get to insights that drive value for our customers.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah, that's a really good way to explain it, too, is kind of the platform and the applications on top of it. I guess I'd be so curious to see what people actually do, you know, the changes they can make with that data after analyzing, right, after seeing the trends, and what kind of things, like the eyes being open to certain things that you could probably see from that data. I think that's
speaking
really cool.
Of eyes being open, one of the things we have not mentioned on this podcast that we've mentioned in many of our other podcasts is artificial intelligence. What role does AI play with data mosaics? Is that something that happens from data mosaics, or is that something that happens with this ecosphere you're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's definitely a play for AI there. So AI is built into the platform itself, and it's something that all of the end users, our partners, or anybody in our ecosystem that wants to leverage the platform can tap into. There are some analytics that can help identify trends as well as identify asset names and really speed the development of those types of applications.
Okay. So you're not starting from scratch necessarily.
Not necessarily, right? So there's a large suite of what are called extractors, which are the components that allow us to pull data from the plant floor in a single direction, right? Kind of coming back to that whole confidence in IT and OT story. We're going to move data in one direction. IT is confident that they're getting data that is, it's pure, it's in the right time series, it's in a format that is unmanipulated. OT is comfortable with the fact that IT doesn't have the ability to, impact their production system because the data is going in a singular direction, right? And then once all of that data using those extractors is into the platform, absolutely, Tom, our partners then have the ability to leverage the capabilities to speed their time to market, right?
Okay.
To develop and deliver product faster. And I think that's really important when you start thinking about sitting down and starting to assign your software engineers and some of your team to a project. We need to make sure that we're able to stay on schedule and deliver value
absolutely
to our end users. So AI can absolutely help there. And Brian, you talked too, you kind of mentioned, where are people really using this? Before we started talking with one of our customers, and they started down the path of using data mosaics to aggregate demand and consumption information from a bunch of different power meters that they have. This is in the aggregates industry, so a large energy consuming process, if you can imagine, crushing rock, right? That's
sure.
It's gonna consume a lot of energy. And so they just wanted initially better insights into their operations. They wanted to be eco-conscious and wanted to look at ways they could potentially start reducing some of their carbon footprint. What they found was when they brought the information into data mosaics and then leveraged one of the pre-built applications from Rockwell Automation, FactoryTalk Energy Manager, they found that they had a number of pieces of equipment that were consuming extremely high amounts of energy when they were supposed to be sitting idle. And so there was very light lifts, right? These are the low-hanging fruit. We're not
sure.
Talking about changing our process. Let's just turn off the drives and motors that are chewing up energy in the middle of the night.
Turn off the lights, honey.
Exactly. That's right, Tom. So, and that's a simple use case, right? We could get much more complex, but I think that one was really eye-opening for me because it wasn't even there was no change to the process. There wasn't any change to the way that they were, delivering the product in their industry in aggregates. It was just simply, can we take advantage of the data that we've been collecting? This was all in a local historian, but until they were able to aggregate that and pair it with some of the other information that was contextualized in a data platform, they wouldn't have been able to gain these insights, right? At a site or global scale.
It's a beautiful example.
Yeah, no, I would think from a customer standpoint, that's probably some of the most rewarding stuff right there, is you don't have to change your process. You're not instituting these large changes. You are, hey, turn that off. You know, like that. And I think that's, I mean,
from a customer standpoint, I'm sure that that is
It's almost like an easy button for that particular scenario.
Exactly. Well, you know, so one of the things I was thinking about with data, kind of like, you know, you're supposed to keep your taxes for 7 years. Like, how much data do people keep? And how long? And like, you know, because as we put this stuff into place, you know, you've got companies that have been around forever. And then as they modernize and they start harvesting this data, if you will, I mean, how long do you keep that?
It's a great question. And you even mentioned keeping your taxes. I think compliance comes into that. So if we start to think about, you know, the direction that a lot of the world is heading, you know, some of the countries that we serve are, you know, maybe further along in their legislation than others. So when we look at Chile and some of the countries in the EMEA region, they already have some legislation that's requiring them to read out their energy consumption, kind of just back onto the energy manager example, right? So in some cases, it's legislation dictated. I think the other piece of that is a platform like this allows you to keep the data that you have longer. We are being more, and when I say longer, I should say more data longer at the same cost as keeping some of a large amount of data shorter. This is allowing us to more prescriptively decide what data is important. Instead of just pumping everything into a cloud repository, let's actually, let's sit down and think about this first. Let's put together a strategy. Let's bring in the data that we need. We can even perform some transformations or simple calculations, you know, in the cloud, and then use that data as the more important, valuable data point, and lose some of the data that was used to create that simple calculation. And then all of that data, right, ends up being stored in the cloud. So one of the other things that's really nice for end users is you're no longer on the hook to maintain that, that infrastructure. You're not supporting local server infrastructure. And I recognize that of all compute, storage is probably the cheapest piece of that between memory and compute. But it doesn't mean that maintenance is any cheaper. It doesn't mean that you don't risk catastrophe by keeping everything locally stored, right?
Yes.
So, almost I'll call it a next generation historian is one of the foundational use cases for a data platform like Data Mosaics, in that we can now start to aggregate all of this data in a platform that's accessible by all, and we're still maintaining the integrity of that data with all of the timestamps from the controller that we would have expected on-prem. So really opens up some new avenues. We see people pushing data at the sub-second level. Some are pushing every 15 minutes. And then data retention kind of becomes a decision based on what the business needs rather than a decision based on have we hit the limits of our existing infrastructure or do we have the right person in the plant that day. So
right.
I think you're making the decision for the right reasons now on data retention.
Yeah, you're not like adding a server because there's no more room left in the closet.
Right.
Yeah, we ran out of slots in the rack. So for that reason, right, you don't want to hear that anymore. Like, let's make the right decision and
exactly
weigh the cost benefit. So.
What about size? And when I say size, what size customer benefits most from this? Can a small greenfield project benefit as much from analyzing their data right off the bat as an existing brownfield that's been around for decades?
Yeah, and I think there's a bunch of really interesting use cases there, Tom. So on a small greenfield, we've actually seen where people are starting to leverage data mosaics during FATs or commissioning of lines. Because when they're moving the data that they capture, even though they know it's not full production yet, it can give them some insights into where they're struggling to bring a machine online.
Right.
Right. It'll allow their teams to start to inspect some of the potential pain points that we have or measure throughput and then compare that with other things that aren't available, right, in that, you know, that local historian, or they're not available all in the same platform. So we can start to get some of those insights. Scaled all the way out through a full large-scale enterprise where you might have 10 plants all producing the same product and you don't really understand why one underperforms. They may not even know that they underperform compared to the other nine. Why is that, right?
Right.
I think that there is value across the board there. We're working with another company. They produce call it construction material for home construction. And they have facilities located throughout the U.S. And, you know, I like coming back to energy because it's such a hot topic. And it's I think it's one that we can all relate to, industry agnostic. But they have started to schedule production around their the costs of energy. So they've started to understand that, you know, in certain parts of the country, you know, if you're in the north, for example, there may be premiums on, in the north of the U.S., there may be premiums on energy during the daytime when a lot of people are trying to run heating or cooling in their homes. You know, as we're in certain countries in the states, in the Southwest, energy is actually cheaper during the day because solar is very prevalent and you're not relying on stored power. So it actually starts to allow you to be more prescriptive, and the savings can be pretty significant when you start to look at the cost of energy. So
yeah, I think I want to use this in my house.
Right. Right. At least to make a good point with my kids.
That's right. You need the analytical dashboard to prove to them.
That's right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because if dad says it, it doesn't mean anything. But if the screen says it,
it means everything.
That's right.
Well, and that's really what's happening here, too, with data, right? Like, the guesswork is starting to become unnecessary. We're actually now being able to actually see what's happening, right? Really understand what's going on, because we're not just guessing. We're actually analyzing and contextualizing, as you said. And so now we're dealing on a whole new level of efficiencies and other things that come from this, right?
Yep, absolutely. Yep. And I think, again, this platform allows you to take it as it is. You're not having to re-architect your system. So you're looking for an area in your architecture, in your facility, to install a lightweight software component that will make and establish that one-way connection up to the, you know, the cloud-based host, in this case, FactoryTalk Data Mosaics. And so you can pull data from all of these different disparate locations and then contextualize it in one place. So we're not asking you to re-architect your plant. Right. We're saying, hey, here's a way for each one of your different operating segments, right? Here's a way for paint, here's a way for body, here's a way for the different the different teams, right? Yep. To work within their own bounds. They don't even have to have data in the same tools or even from the same vendors, right? To make this all meaningful in the same place. And that's really powerful.
Yeah. Unbelievable. I think, you know, I'm thinking, you know, when we talked last show with Emulate 3D with Tyler, and talking about the, how much, I guess, smarter you can be from a design standpoint using emulation software and simulating things before spending the money, before putting it out there. You combine that with data collection and the, really the insights you can get on when to do things and you know, where to put that money. And you kind of couple them together. Now you're making very educated decisions, you know, based on both design as well as the data telling you to do it.
Yeah, stop spending money. Stop turning on the power.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you think about, like, the stuff that it tells you to do, there's plenty of stuff it probably tells you not to do as well. Yes. So, you know, you need to stop that.
Absolutely.
Well, Nick, thank you so much for joining us, you know, taking your time out. We are at Automation Fair right now, and everybody's super busy. So thank you. Thank you for taking the time.
My pleasure, guys. This has been an exciting topic. I think if, you know, we looked at the growth of, you know, kind of DevOps through the 2000s, right? I mean, that's a common term that I think we've all grown to understand. DevOps is, you know, integrally important in what all of our manufacturers do. I think we're just on the front of data ops becoming that next big wave. So where DevOps was for IT, I think this will really be the equivalent for our production teams. So
awesome. I think so. Thank you. Okay. Well, that was, I mean, just as you would expect with Nick, that was a great conversation. It was great to get a chance to talk to him. And I think it was great.
It's one of our best guests by far. You know, we full disclosure, we've known Nick maybe a little better than we've known some other folks in the organization. But Nick is one of those people that has a way of explaining things to anyone he's talking to because of his depth of understanding across a broad knowledge of industrial automation techniques, applications. You know, you name historical trends, things that are happening. Nick is definitely a leader in the automation industry, and it was our pleasure to sit down and talk with him at Automation Fair.
Absolutely. I guess from industry to industry, this, you know, honestly, even when we're talking about digital transformation and we talk about ways to use it and things, I don't think I always think of different industries. I think I'm stuck in, you know, consumer goods and production in that aspect. So when you start talking about, you know, some of the other industries, the other ways that this, the, well, data mosaics or anything is used, I think it always, I guess, makes me think of it a little bit differently. And I love that. And Nick's got that wealth of knowledge.
Indeed. And we talked about this, you know, this is really the beginning time period for making good use of data, right? I think you'll hear, our listeners will hear in the conversation, customers have been creating data lakes, or I think as Nick said, even data oceans for years now. But not really knowing what to do with all that information, or not really even having a mechanism to do anything. And that is all starting to change. It's changing rapidly. And again, it's not just an overview of an organization. These tools allow individual parts within an organization to fine tune what they're doing, not only in their own organizations, but across the organization. So again, it's something that's always had potential. And now we finally have the technology to do something with that potential.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think, as you said, this is kind of the beginning, and where it goes and how much it improves. And just the whole thing is very exciting when you not only talk about transformation, but, you know, progression and moving forward. I think it's an exciting time.
It is. And it's one of those things, again, and we said this about a lot of technologies, but this is one of those things that the people who latch onto data and learn how to wrangle it, contextualize it, and turn it around to make it make themselves more productive, more profitable, whatever you want. They will be the winners in the future. And the people that ignore the data, we might not even be talking about them.
Yeah, I think it's funny. You know, I'm a fan of watching sports, and especially in football and basketball. You know, they've really grabbed a hold of the idea of making coaching decisions and decisions on the field as it pertains to the analytics for the situations. And, you know, that's like a small drop in the bucket for some of the just vast amounts of data and information that the industries are gathering.
And that's a great example, though, because most people watch some sort of sports, right? And I think they would concur that sports has been gathering and actually using data very well for years, and actually translating it into things like we talk about graphical representations of data, right? So that even people maybe who don't have an engineering degree can look at a graphical representation of something and say, well, I can see this trend, and I can understand this trend, and I can take action to change this trend.
Yeah. No, I think that's, I mean, visualizing what the data says is it's key. I mean, that's how you get people to understand it, especially people who don't completely understand the data that they're looking at.
Viz is the key.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Tom, as always, great show. And we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Brian.
The Plant Podcast is produced by the ThinManager product team. ThinManager is a Rockwell Automation technology. The opinions and statements made as part of this podcast are not necessarily those of Rockwell Automation. Listeners should not rely on or recommend any content as advice, guidance, or instruction. The Plant Podcast is strictly for the entertainment of our listeners.